Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. On the Money with Krista Simeo this morning is Peter Sorrentino from Huntington Asset Advisors.
So when is adding 431,000 new jobs to the workforce a bad thing? Probably when 411,000 of them are temporary census workers. An hour and a half or so before trading opened on Wall Street yesterday morning, the market was treated to that little gem, and the futures were down about 200 points right from the get-go, in fact, erasing almost all of Wednesday's gain. And it was a hard-fought day yesterday on Wall Street. And to help us make sense of the jobs numbers and the volatility in the market, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Mr. Peter Sorrentino, a chartered financial analyst. Peter is an investment manager at Huntington Investment Advisors here in Cincinnati, Ohio, and has been in this business many, many, many years. Peter, thanks for taking part of your weekend to be with us.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you.
You're on CNBC all the time. You see on Bloomberg all the time. How often is it that you're on camera or you're on the radio, and when there's hot news like this employment number, what does that do to people with your length of experience in the financial services industry?
It's interesting because there's this knee-jerk reaction to respond to it in the way that you know what you expected, and then when you hear the number, if it's radically different, to just sort of blurt out the first thing in your in your thought process, which is it's like, oh, geez, that's a bad number, and I don't think I can drink that one pretty.
Yeah.
But you have to step back and go, wait a minute, this is just one data point. Oftentimes, it's more important to look at the revisions from the prior numbers, which oftentimes even change the direction of the earlier numbers.
Yeah, we've had that throughout the year.
Completely true.
So at first blurt, then it was like, oh, my gosh, this is not great. But is there a silver lining perhaps in these numbers?
Well, it's interesting because the ISM numbers that were out earlier, the
Institute for Supply Management.
Yes. Their number was a little weaker than expected, but by a tenth. So it wasn't – it's still a positive number. We're at a point in time where there's a lot of cross currents in the economy. You had the new home buyer tax credits have expired in May, but yet construction data came out very strong on the commercial side.
Yeah, up 2.7%. They're looking for .1. And so so you have all this construction spending going on theoretically. Shouldn't that lead to new jobs?
It should, and it ultimately will. The problem that we were seeing is that there's still a sorting out going on in the economy. The productivity number actually dropped off a little, which at first blush would sound like a bad thing. But what it indicated in sort of a perverse sense was that more jobs are being added, people are being hired. And so as a result, the hours being worked is actually going up. And so the output numbers haven't quite caught up with it yet.
Yeah, we did see that yesterday. The average hourly work week expanded just a notch. The salary, the hourly the number of hours worked and the average hourly wage, both those figures were higher. There was an interesting piece on construction, not the construction spending, but construction employment that came out the week before, essentially saying that maybe a lot of these construction workers who are finishing up with one job go back and file another unemployment claim when their gig is up.
Mm-hmm.
But these claims aren't necessarily all improved. It's just the first claim. Apparently, about half of these things get rejected at some point.
The devil is in the detail on these numbers, and because they've extended unemployment benefits, it's very difficult to do period to period comparisons. So, I think you have to look at a much more broader array of data to understand. And we had very strong profit growth in the first quarter. The second quarter looks to be on track for equally as well. Auto sales, I know there was a number thrown out, the pickup truck index this week.
Oh, yeah, that's a new one that the Auto Nation's coming out with.
So apparently the sales of pickup trucks and SUVs, which are tend to be owned by small businesses, those were up dramatically without any incentives. And so kind of a vote that that people are feeling better, and so they're committing capital. We saw very positive results from Oracle in terms of IT spending. So it's not as dark and bleak a picture. I think the problem that we have is between the news headlines of what's going on in the Gulf and then the issues in Western Europe right now. It's easy to put that negative mindset on, but when you look at the U.S., and the NASDAQ is telling us this, the NASDAQ is flat for the year while the major blue chips are actually down. Well, those are multinationals as opposed to primarily domestics.
Yeah.
So it's a different picture if you just look at the U.S. in isolation.
Yeah. Speaking of the Gulf of Mexico, this week, British Petroleum succeeded in sawing off the edge of that pipe. And they got some kind of cap on it now. Yesterday morning, headline crossing that ticker tape on CNBC that, you know, some rumblings about the dividend for British Petroleum. What are some of the opportunities and some of the pitfalls there in respect to what's happening there in the Gulf of Mexico?
Well, the moratorium that was put in place really is going to cause all kinds of repercussions because those rigs are paid anywhere from $200,000 to $500,000 a day. And if the government's put a moratorium on, you know, they're under contract to operate. So there could be very easily a migration of equipment and personnel out of the Gulf because they've got to pay those. There's no force majeure for a government action. So the oil companies are liable to move those to the coast of Africa or to other areas.
Literally pick the rig up.
Those rigs will move.
Pull out and ship it away.
So that could have an impact later on for us in terms of both availability and supply. Because what we're experiencing in crude oil right now is what we've seen across the board in all commodities. They became financial assets. They were being hoarded, warehoused. And now what's happening is demand hasn't picked up fast enough. So you're going to get this interim dump of inventory, all those floating tankers that were filled up with oil. That's going to hit the market, depress prices for the near term, and we're going to be lulled somewhat by that. And then there's going to be a snapback when that supply is gone, and we will not have fresh production to come on stream to replace it.
Boy, it sounds like Muhammad Ali's rope-a-dope.
Absolutely. And if you were looking to pass it, Rahm Emanuel was right. Why let a good crisis go to waste?
You alluded to Greece and Europe in general. Now, Spain last week passes the austerity vote by one. Austerity measure. And now people are talking about Hungary somehow. We forgot about them. What can investors do to reduce the volatility in their portfolios as a result of all the tumult in Europe?
It's at this point in time, I think it's very instructive to look at the markets themselves. And in this case, you don't look at Europe as a whole. You look at the individual markets. And Germany for the year is flat. With all the bad news, with all the bailing out that Germany's going to be doing, their market, the DAX, is essentially flat for the year, which stands in pretty good stead to the rest of the developed world. But for a U.S. investor, you can, because of the dollar rallying versus the euro, you can buy that market for about 16% less than you could at the beginning of the year.
If you're paying for it with Yankee dollars.
With Yankee dollars. So, you know, you could move into a Germany-specific companies, and there are a bunch of them out there that trade in the U.S. There's Siemens, a great, you know, company in terms of engineering and electronics, SAP on the technology side.
BMW, for example.
Volkswagen's a huge seller in Japan right now, in China. So there's all kinds of opportunities to buy those names.
Yeah, these were the highlighted on the cover story of Barron's last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
How's the bond market looking these days? And with all the commotion in equities, are there any pockets of stability in the credit markets that might offer some comfort and solace to investors?
At this juncture, I think, you know, investors really want to probably look to the domestic market here in the U.S., or unless you want to be really risky. And then the emerging markets offer great coupon and probably better financial terms.
Emerging markets such as?
Oh, if you looked at any place along the Pacific Rim, the Philippines, Indonesia, even some of the more growthy economies, India, those kind of areas. And there are global bond funds that can get you access there. The problem that, you know, just hearing Nouriel Roubini start to talk about what we knew all along,
Mr. Happy,
was that that these bonds from Europe have to be restructured,
yeah,
which means there's, you know, that you don't know if you're buying into the euro bond complex what you're actually going to be left with. So we've been through this before. That's where the Brady bonds came from back a couple decades in the
forgot
past.
Forgot about those. Secretary of the Treasury Brady, those bonds were related to South America.
That was Latin America. That was bailing the U.S. banks, Citigroup and others, who had loaned money in Latin America. That was a way of getting them off the hook. And so these bonds were issued to sort of restructure the debt from Argentina and others back 25 years ago. So we've been down this road before. It's just interesting. It's just now taking people to get to the point where they have to kind of fess up and say, okay, well, those bonds are never going to pay off at par. So how do we deal with this?
Yeah, and then the rolling loan gathers no loss. You just keep pushing it or
kicking
it down. Kicking
it down the road.
Kicking
absolutely.
It down the road a little bit and just keep it in play. You know, the telecom sector has been a fairly stable area for the last couple of weeks. The dividend yields are pretty fairly competitive in there. Any thoughts on the telecom sector?
It's an area that, as the U.S. economy picks up, just by sheer volume, should do better. You've really sorted out the playing field in terms of the cellular guys. Most of their big capital buildouts are already taken care of. Their fiber running that they were going to do to, you know, wherever they wanted to run it. So the big CapEx risk is out. I think the stocks really underperformed for a long time because there was this belief that the new administration was going to go after, and it was thought very aggressively go after the telecom industry. But they've got their hands full. And so now there's kind of this relief taking place that, gee, maybe we're not in the crosshairs for a while. And the fundamentals and the cash flow, as you pointed out, are pretty compelling.
Yeah, and every time someone fires up an iPod or an iPad or a cell phone and they start using that infrastructure, it's more money for your local carrier.
It is a legal form of you know, we'll just let that go.
We'll let that one go. And we need to get going. Well, I want to thank you, Peter Sorrentino from Huntington Advisors, so much for taking part of your weekend to be with us.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
And for Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimeo on The Money.